Hi, guys.
Hello.
Howdy.
So, tell my fan who you are.
Oh, you have a fan? Congratulations. My name is Bertrand Leroy. I'm a program manager on Orchard. And Orchard is a web CMS for .NET.
I'm Bradley Millington. I'm also a program manager on Orchard.
And Broadcast Chai. So, I've been playing a lot with Orchard, and it's been sort of an interesting turn of events. Maybe you can share, just for my own edification. I was involved in the early conversations of Orchard, the early planning, and I actually stopped going to the meetings because I thought things got so sidetracked. I sort of decided nothing will ever ship, and I just sort of stopped listening. And then you guys came in and sort of took that conversation and somehow replaced it with what we're now seeing that folks are pretty excited about. How did that process happen?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
So you just...
Well, you know, actually, that's a pretty old idea. There were quite a few people in this team, in the ASP.NET team, who were convinced that ASP.NET needed to have something new in the CMS area that people could build on, and that would be built on very modern and up-to-date techniques, and that would implement a number of ideas that we had about what a CMS should be. And it appears that a few people who had the power to make it happen thought the same, so there we are.
Yeah.
You know, it's always a conjunction of people who want to do something and people who can enable it. You need both.
I definitely think it's something that ASP.NET needs. As somebody who has also done a bunch of stuff in the PHP world, mm-hmm. a lot of PHP adoption is driven by, open source applications that are positioned as CMSs, but they're not really being used as CMSs. They're being used as a set of building blocks or a framework for building a custom application that has some of the core functionality of a CMS. And when I talk to folks about Orchard, I actually don't position it as a CMS. Mm-hmm. I position it more as a framework whose default behavior is a content management system.
Yeah, so CMS is a pretty vague term that is being used for many different things. And there is actually a spectrum from WordPress, which is actually a blog engine, but that some people consider a CMS, to Drupal, which is, as Orchard, really a framework whose basic behavior is a CMS.
Right.
But the important part is the extensibility, the extreme extensibility of the system.
Well, and I think that one of the things I'm excited about Orchard is that when you're going to build rich functionality, there's a natural complexity that comes with that. Mm-hmm. And the sweet spot, I think, is providing that functionality without making the extensibility model so complex that mere mortals can't participate.
Yeah, so we are still struggling with that somewhat. We still have some people who look at Orchard at first and don't really know where to look and are kind of overwhelmed by the perceived complexity and the level of abstraction that's in there. And that is because we built the foundations first, which kind of makes sense. And the foundations are, as you said, necessarily complex. I mean, as Einstein said, make it as simple as possible, but no simpler.
Right.
And with the kind of extensibility that we wanted, there is a minimum level of complexity that comes with it. And then you build the simplicity as a layer on top of that, which is something that we are doing now. So it's becoming more approachable as we go. It's becoming more simple. But that is actually hard work have to do on top of a layer that is very extensible, very flexible, but also very abstract.
Well, and one of the things that you've been doing that is, you know, is naturally painful, but that I think is a great thing is that you guys have been pretty consistent with being transparent. The code is public, mm-hmm. and you get to various milestones, and then you take feedback. And if the product of that feedback convinces you that you should have done things a different way, mm-hmm. you're making those changes immediately rather than sort of hanging on to, well, we've gone this far down this path. And the ultimate end result of that, even though there's some angst during the development process as we're building towards version one, the result is a much better product because a lot of the vetting process in terms of implementation and design mm-hmm. comes from the folks that are going to be using it and building on it, as opposed to, you know, a bunch of us that sort of sit down and say, this is how it ought to work.
Yeah. We also have a few people on the team who have very strong opinions on how it should work. And the great thing is that they can actually convince you that it's the way to go. So, it's a mix of taking external feedback into account and being very open and, trying to gather as much feedback as possible as early as possible, and also having strong opinions about, how CMS should be built.
But that customer influence in the process is super important. I'm sort of this schizophrenic inside outsider, right? So, I work mm-hmm. for Microsoft, but yeah. I'm not on campus. And so, I'm always saying to you guys in the product teams that, you need to try hard to remember that the folks that are going to use the products that you build are not necessarily the same kinds of people that sit yeah. in the offices next to you. Mm-hmm. And there are folks that, write code for 40 hours a week, and they don't write code for 100 hours a week,
yep.
and they don't, they don't live, eat, and breathe technology.
Yes.
And for success to happen, this stuff has to be accessible to them
Absolutely.
Without this huge intellectual investment being made.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and the feedback that I'm getting from folks that I'm showing Orchard to is that they see the potential for that in Orchard.
Yes.
I mean, you can... And one of the tough things, I think, is, people install it, they look at the source tree, and geez, the source tree can look sort of imposing, and mm-hmm. And it's only when you show somebody, here's how you do a thing that might be pretty complex conceptually, but it's pretty easy in practice,
yeah.
That people start to get excited. I mean, one of the things that I like is that, along the lines of it's a framework whose default behavior is a content management system. There are default content types, but those default content types are actually aggregate of all of the different artifacts that might be used to create a piece of content. And you can use those artifacts in any combination defining your own custom types.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be a programmer to do that.
Yeah, exactly. You can think of it as Lego pieces. I mean, it really is like that. You have all those little pieces mm-hmm. that you can put together and create some great stuff. And we provide those pieces. And currently, it's been a little too visible that how we were extruding those little pieces of plastic, how we were building the plastic itself. You don't have to know that. All you have to know is that this piece goes together with
right.
that one and enables you to create a house, a car, or whatever. And and we're trying to get to that level of simplicity, but again, it's a layer of simplicity that you add on top of something that is very extensible and can be a little abstract. So I think it's really a matter of what is your entry point into the system. And currently, so far, your entry point has been the source tree, and the source tree is fairly complex. And more, we want people to enter the system from tutorials, from learning tools that show them the simplicity first and only exposes them to the complexity as they go and as they need it. It's really a matter of where you enter into the system.
Well, and that's one of the things that makes that sort of user configurable type system so powerful mm-hmm. is that you can actually create custom usage scenarios for the content portion of Orchard without writing any code or cracking open Visual Studio. Mm-hmm. So sort of where using Orchard becomes a software development experience is, I think, further down the line than it
yeah.
might be for an average piece of software that manages content.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I also think that, the direction that, at least that I interpret, that the development model is going is looking for that same building blocks experience. You know, the way that you're using attributes to make inclusion of custom code, but inside the context of Orchard, mm-hmm. makes it pretty easy. I think that the tough part is, as you said, you know, sometimes there's a downside to early transparency is that you're building the infrastructure first, and there's a necessary level of complexity. So if people take a look during that building process, it's like if you look at a 30-story building, if you look at it when it's under construction as the frame is going up, it looks like this monstrously complex thing. But then when the walls are up and the paint's on and the windows are in, you look at it and you go, oh yeah, it's just a beautiful building.
Mm-hmm. It has a door on an elevator, right. And you know how to use it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So things like one of the demos that I did at a recent conference was, you know, adding some custom functionality by adding an area. Mm-hmm. And the actual process for adding custom functionality using an area is, you know, an MVC area is the same as, you know, it's very much the same as building a separate project that mm-hmm. is a module. Mm-hmm. And you know, you build some custom code and, you know, you want it to look like the rest of your Orchard site, you know, you use a themed attribute. And the framework just picks that up.
Yeah.
And I assume that, you know, that's the same model that you're looking to use, you know, throughout the development model wherever possible.
Yeah, pretty much.
So
the big difference between a CMS and a regular application is that you need to think more in terms of smaller components that you assemble. Whereas in an application, you're in control of everything, and you know all the components you're interacting with. Whereas in a CMS, you're building smaller blocks, and those blocks are likely to interact with stuff that you don't even know about. So it's about composition. You can think of Orchard as a composition engine. Composition of content types, composition of UI, it's composition everywhere.
I agree, but I think the thing that's especially exciting for developers about Orchard is that there is this presumption that they're going to build sort of composite applications mm-hmm. that are their web properties. But I happen to be here on campus this week for the Patterns and Practices Symposium, mm-hmm. and you know I've been listening to some of the presentations there, and they're all academically very interesting. But a lot of the times what I'm hearing, you know, detailed discussions about the exact proper way to implement dependency injection or mm-hmm. inversion of control containers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of times I feel that, you know, those conversations become sort of so academic or, you know, that level of complexity gets added to solve problems that nobody's really sure are ever going to exist. Whereas with something like Orchard, you have a reasonably well-defined set of scenarios, mm-hmm. and the abstraction is enough to facilitate those scenarios, but not sort of just so much as to be, you know, academically pure, if that makes sense.
Dependency injection is an interesting example. It's something that you need pretty much everywhere. And I don't know, you just made it as simple as we could. If you need, for example, I don't know, a command service in your component, you just include the Nike command service. I don't even know if that interface exists. I'm making that up. But in your class, it will just be there. I mean, the dependency injection is part of the environment. It's just ambient. You just get it for free when you do Orchard. It's just there. It's very easy. And just use it.
So 0.05 is sort of the last formal drop.
Latest, yes.
Right. And you guys and the team are furiously working on 0.8?
Yeah, currently we have how many? 8 developers locked into a room?
Locked in a room.
Yeah, we're
developers, 2 designers. Yeah.
Yep, yep. We are not letting them out until it's done. So, we are passing pizza through the mail slot. And
they only have until next week, PDC, to get it done?
So we are releasing that, if all goes well, on Monday. So next Monday is the big release date for 0.8.
And what's new in 0.8?
Theming is completely redone, which means that now you have a new way of composing your UI.
So what's new about it, and why did you change it?
We changed it because constructing your UI before was always meant to be a temporary solution. So we had theming, but figuring out what template you had to write with what name and putting it where in the site was fairly complex to figure out. And we replaced all that with much simpler conventions. So that's the first part. And the second part is that we added a concept of a page object model that replaces what you usually do in MVC, which is to have a view model that is strongly typed and that you pass into the view.
Uh-huh.
So again, we are all about composition. That means that your view model needs to be composed from many different parts. Right? So for example, when you compose your homepage, you have the main contents of your homepage, you have some widgets on the side, you have a search form, a login control, you have a menu, a table of contents, you name it. And it will vary greatly from site to site. So you need to compose all that. And how do you do that with a model that encourages strongly typed, fairly rigid view models?
Right.
Well, you actually use a feature of C# 4 that is called dynamic, and as the name implies, it introduces dynamic types, and we have that very, very, very flexible dynamic object model where you can create what we call shapes on the fly. And shapes are, well, if you think about web controls in web forms,
yeah,
they had one thing right. The thing that they had right was a way to encapsulate a piece of functionality that is slightly higher level than HTML, and that is really at the level of abstraction of your application.
Mm-hmm.
So it's reusable, but it doesn't handle a life cycle or a state or anything like that. So it's really about rendering. But it takes back that concept of having a higher level abstraction for something that renders.
Right.
So you can have a menu, for example, that will be a shape. You can have a zone where you put widgets, that will be a shape. The widget itself will be rendered as a shape.
And so that zone or that shape is completely independent of what your layout strategy is? Or?
Yes. Yes. It's before rendering. It's an abstract representation of what you are going to render. It's very, it really is your view model, except that it's very dynamic, and it's an object graph instead of being one big object. And you can add to it at any time.
So based on your description, I'm wondering if that model might make it much easier to convert existing themes that work with other CMSs or frameworks.
Maybe, yes, maybe.
So one of the things I've wanted to play around with is the idea of maybe writing something like a WordPress theme converter for Orchard.
That's an interesting idea.
Because because there's such a repository of UI out there for WordPress.
Uh-huh.
I thought, ultimately it's,
Yeah, so the problem you have with WordPress is that themes in WordPress have a lot of code in them. So that would be a challenge. But for just the pure rendering part, why not?
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't, custom functionality might be difficult, and it wouldn't have to be a complete converter, but at least to get the basics of the UI.
Mm-hmm.
So what else? Widgets.
So widgets, as I said, will be rendered as shapes. So they are, widgets are reusable UI pieces.
Like web forms controls.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you remember WebParts?
Yeah, okay, like WebParts for SharePoint?
Yeah. Well, WebParts were actually in ASP.NET.
Yeah.
We didn't really need SharePoint for that.
But SharePoint developers were the only ones that used them.
Yeah, true. Well, yeah. Mostly. There are a few, actually. There are other CMS, ASP.NET CMS that are using them. So widgets are content items, which means that you could take an existing widget and add it a part the same way that you can add a part to a content type. So let's say, for example, that you have an HTML widget and you want to add a map to it, you could do that.
Doesn't that also open up the door for folks in the community to contribute widget parts that then get consumed by folks that are using Orchard to create their own custom types?
Right, yeah, you could do that, although I'm not sure there is a scenario for purely widget parts. I think parts in general could be added to widgets or content types. I'm not sure there is a specific scenario here that you don't already have for content types. But you could in principle do that. That would be going fairly far in the extensibility of widgets here. I don't think most people will need anything like that. It's just that it maybe shows how the foundations that we laid before are being very useful now to create new features in the system.
Well, and you and your team are at a place where the infrastructure is starting to gel.
Yeah.
That means that we're starting to enter into the phase where contributions external to Microsoft are theoretically going to start to happen, right? I mean, one of the successes,
yes,
the success of any open source application is driven by what sort of a life of its own that it takes on. You guys can't stay on Orchard for, you know, the next 5 years or 10 years, or, you know, there's going to be the next super important thing for you guys to do.
I don't know.
No, you're going to stay on Orchard. But so things
for the,
like,
foreseeable future, yeah.
You know, WordPress has emerged as perhaps the most successful blogging platform, not because WordPress is a perfect piece of code.
Oh, because of plugins and themes.
But because you can go to a gallery and browse thousands of themes and pick the one that meets your style. Or you can think of any functionality that you might want to add. And 50 you didn't think of,
and there's a plugin
for it.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, the success is largely predicated on what was added to the core.
Hmm. Yeah, and that actually explains how we built things. We were very aware that we were never going to be a full division at Microsoft with 4,000 employees, you know, creating Orchard extensions, right?
Working on a free open source product.
Yeah, which is about the only way a company like Microsoft could get the number of plugins that you have for something like WordPress or Drupal. I mean, let's be realistic. So to build that kind of ecosystem, you need the community. There is no doubt about that.
The community is hungry to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
There have been other ASP.NET applications out there, open source to varying degrees, but none of them have really, really caught on.
Well, .NET Nuke did fairly well. Umbraco is doing well and is growing fairly fast.
Umbraco is definitely an up-and-comer. So Umbraco is sort of the true community-driven open source. .NET Nuke, they were first, definitely, credit to them. But I think, .NET Nuke has been around for a long time, based on web forms. There's a very sort of for-profit enterprise that surrounds .NET Nuke. Mm-hmm. So, while .NET Nuke works for a lot of folks, there's also, I think, a large segment of the community that, needs an alternative. The fact that Orchard is MVC-based, I think, really appeals to lots of folks. And, we can say whatever we want about the various choices that we've provided for building ASP.NET applications. Web Forms isn't going away anytime soon. We've added WebMatrix for a certain genre of the of the development community, but you know, MVC is certainly enjoying the thrust of the new popularity. So the fact that Orchard is based on MVC and not, you know, MVC one, you guys are staying really current.
Yeah, we're already on MVC 3 beta.
With yeah. Razor syntax support.
Yes. Yeah, which is one of the new things in the theme engine.
Yeah.
Razor is the default.
Awesome. It's the default.
Yeah, it's the default. Yeah.
See, I think that's...
We rewrote all of our views using Razor. There is not an ASCX left in the application today.
So all of the new views in 0.08, in the 0.08 release, will be Razor-based?
Yes.
So I think that's incredibly important because, you know, even though there's been a lot of chatter about Razor and, you know, WebMatrix in general and Razor in particular, and how, you know, we're sort of back to the mixing of concerns to some, you know, to some extent, I think that because Razor can be atomically manipulated, it's going to make it much easier for folks to make adaptations using Razor syntax.
Yeah, well, actually, there's been a fair amount of confusion around ASP.NET Web Pages, which is the real name of the first thing that people saw around Razor.
Yes, so that is
a full-page rendering and processing engine, and we are not using that.
Right.
We're using just the part that takes the template language of Razor, and you inject data into that,
right,
and we're rendering.
So for folks that are listening that are confused about that, so the thing that's sort of holistically being referred to as WebMatrix, WebMatrix is really the development tool for ASP.NET Web Pages, which is not what classic ASP was, although people, that we've sort of, we've done what we often do with the naming of things. Razor is the actual rendering engine that is supported by ASP.NET Web Pages, but also other things like ASP.NET MVC 3.
Yes.
The Razor rendering engine is one of the rendering engines that is...
Right. And what we were interested in was definitely the template syntax.
Right.
That is a lot simpler than web forms. And, well, it also comes with less baggage with it. I mean, it's been built for that, basically. Whereas web forms is more something that was retrofitted to MVC.
Yeah, you know, I think somebody described me on Twitter a couple of months ago as being Microsoft's web forms apologist. And... yeah, I wasn't quite sure whether that was a
you mean apologist in the religious sense.
Yeah. And you know, I think WebForms was a brilliant solution to the problem that was present 10 years ago when it was invented, more than 10 years ago.
Oh, I loved it 10 years ago personally.
Well, yeah, and so we had a whole genre of developers that were client server developers that were building, you know, Visual Basic, Delphi, Power Builder applications that knew event-driven programming and were used to a particular experience, right? Draw on the palette, click on something, write code behind that click. And, you know, web forms let those folks not have to change paradigms but do development on the web. But now, 10 years later, folks have, you know, that level of abstraction now becomes a liability. And and I think that's the reason that both ASP.NET MVC and the whole WebMatrix stack is enjoying popularity, is that it, you know, it sort of embraces the fact that the web is stateless and the web has client-side, you know, there's some client-side technology that now we actually need to know about because we want to manipulate it. And
yeah, we make progress, we learn, and progress is sometimes doing more simple stuff. So.
But for me, that's one of the cool things about Orchard is that, you know, I think you're well on your way to doing a pretty good job about letting a developer write functional extensions to Orchard without having to wander through the Orchard infrastructure, and that I think has been missing. If you looked at some of the earlier efforts to create open source applications in ASP.NET that were based on web forms, you had to develop really a pretty significant understanding of the application as a whole before you could make even minor changes, and that's not going to be the case with Orchard. Yeah,
I agree.
So. So we've got the theming engine, we've got widgets, shapes.
Yes.
We have the new, all of the new presentation layer being Razor-based.
Yes.
What else? anything?
Oh, yeah. We have a new default theme that is called the Theme Machine.
Theme Machine?
The Theme Machine, because its purpose is to become some kind of basic building block for new themes. It is a modern and beautiful theme, but it also is very flexible and made to be the basis for your own customizations. It has lots of zones that can appear or disappear whether you need them or not. It's extremely flexible, and many people will take that and run with it and create their own stuff.
So I've had more than a couple of people ask me how come the Orchard Project theme, the Orchard Project website theme, is so nice, and none of the ones that ship with the Orchard Project were as nice as the theme on the website.
Okay. Well, OrchardProject.net is not running Orchard today. It will eventually, but we haven't eaten our own dog food so far on the website. Currently, it's a plain MVC application with static views. It's something very simple. Because Orchard wasn't ready to host that sort of site so far. But now would probably be the good time to transfer it. And when we do that, we have to, make our own thing. And,
So that brings up a couple of interesting questions. So the root of my website is running Orchard.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting to manage content through it, but I'm not doing my blogging on Orchard yet because the blogging story is still not quite 100% there.
I have two blogs. I have my professional blog and I have my personal blog, and my personal blog is running Orchard today. I fully realize the limitations of it. Notifications, for example, we're missing so far. Oh, we're getting that in 0.8 as well.
Oh, cool.
Email notifications. Small details that just, we have a few things to streamline so that we get to the kind of workflows.
Spam prevention?
Spam prevention has been there for a while. But
So is there going to be, are there going to be compatibility challenges moving forward with versions of Orchard? So, for example, going from 0.5 to 0.8 to 1.0?
Yeah, that's a great question. something of a personal fight, actually. Essentially, 0.8 is breaking compatibility with 0.5, but I'm currently working on an import-export module that hopefully will enable you soon to extract all of your data from 0.5 and then import it back into 0.8. So it won't be entirely painless, although we have data migrations that should have made it more or less painless, but they didn't go exactly according to plan, so we need a tool like that. Going forward, I hope that from 0.8 to 0.9 or to 1.0, we'll be able to have better upgrade stories.
Will that migration tool also be open source or part of the
project? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Because one of the things that I've had lots of interest, so I'm an avid Twitter and Facebook user, and I've been talking about Orchard in the last couple of months, and there are a lot of folks that want to migrate. So they have their blogs in some other technology. They're excited about where Orchard is going and want a story to pull forward. And even to the point where they're saying, hey, when Orchard is ready, I'd be willing in contributing to writing a migration tool from whatever they're on today.
Yeah. And actually, there is a community module that exists today that was built by Nick Main. That does BlogML, which is a standard way of importing and exporting blogs. And that is available today. So you can import contents from most blogs. It's just a command. So you can actually do a blog import and then give it the URL of your blog and done. And I also wrote a blog post a while ago on importing custom data. And there is some source code available that shows, it's even doing screen scraping, which is the crudest form of import that you could make. But actually, I imported contents from my Face blog, including comments. And I also imported contents from my old blog. You could adapt it to many different things.
So when we get closer to the 1.0 release, we'll definitely want to circle back and
sure.
And I've moved my blog several from platforms to several times mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. Some weren't too bad and some hurt a lot, but I've done it yeah. enough now that I've got content I could probably test moving from almost all the popular ones to Orchard. So,
uh-huh.
So any ballpark guess on the 1.0 time frame?
Yeah, sure. January. Yep.
So you're not going to unlock that door and let them out of the room until it's done in January?
we'll allow them to
go home for Christmas.
And, yeah.
All right. Well, anything else you'd like to share with anybody that's listening?
Just look at it and try to build some cool modules. We need them.
And so how
can't wait to see what people are going to build with that. We want to be surprised.
So what is there going to be a modulatory a module repository or a themes repository?
Oh, that's a great question, and I'm sure Brad would be happy to answer that.
I finally get to speak. Yeah.
Well, for once, I talk a lot, which is usually it's the other way around.
That's true. clearly, with an aggressive time frame for V1 like January, what you observe that we've been building and what V1 is shaping up to be is an extensibility engine, a place where you can extend it through widgets, translations, modules, themes, all those being kind of community extensions to the core Orchard system. And so we want to have a great place where people can share those. The 0.5 release had a very simple Atom feed and a way that people can package extensions, push them to a gallery, and pull them back down into the Orchard admin panel, but it's basically just a feed, not really a full-blown website that allows people to find and search and browse.
So through that feed, are they actually installable from the admin panel?
In fact, they are. There's an optional, everything in Orchard is a feature you can enable or disable. A couple of the features that the 0.5 release had was a packaging module you can turn on to take any module you have in your Orchard site and zip it up into a package file format. It's basically a zip file with a manifest. And then there's a gallery module you can enable that will allow you to submit that to the feed. So it's maybe a little known feature, and there have been a few people that have pushed their stuff to the feed. Nick Main pushed his BlogML module.
But don't you think that's really important? Because one of the challenges that you guys have that isn't normally in place in product development, if you will, and even though this is a free open source application, it's still in a large sense a product, but you have two very different audiences. You have the consumer, the end user, who's going to use Orchard and whatever's available through the Orchard ecosystem, who's not going to be, write their own themes or write their own custom extensions. Then you have the designer and developer audience that are going to do those customizations. And those are, you have to make two really different audiences happy with the product.
Yeah. And I think V1 is going to lean a little more heavily toward that developer and designer audience and trying to create incentives for people to want to extend the system and build interesting components that second audience can just use. But if we're expecting V1 to be a blog on par with WordPress, that's not likely to happen by January. What will happen is we will have a very solid infrastructure for people to build these extensions and share them with each other, and we think by setting up a great gallery website and feed, which kind of back to the original question, we do have plans to deliver an open source version of a gallery website that we will use to power our own gallery, as well as it'll be open source so anybody could leverage it for their own gallery website purposes. We're hoping that other others are interested in collaborating on that. In fact, we're working very closely with the NUPAC team here internally at Microsoft to make sure that this open source gallery implementation can work well for both Orchard and the NUPAC package gallery. So that's an effort that's underway. We hope to prop that site up for the V1 launch.
But the Orchard experience will be through the admin API, so that you won't need command line access or...
You won't necessarily need to. I mean, the admin panel in Orchard provides a window over the gallery feed, but of course the gallery will be, you know, an independent website you could browse just using your web browser as well.
For modules and for themes?
For both modules and themes, perhaps translation files as well.
Oh, awesome.
So that's the goal, and we hope that V1 sort of officially kicks off, you know, the gallery, a very stable extensibility platform, and something that over, you know, post V1 we'll see lots of great extensions showing up in that gallery for kind of end user type consumers of Orchard just to configure and use and assemble.
So in terms of the community that's sort of waiting to get started. Does 0.8, how gelled is that in terms of themes and modules for folks to start building? How much change is there going to be if I built a theme and a module today?
0.5 was about stabilizing the module infrastructure, and 0.8 is about stabilizing the UI composition layer, so theming, widgets. So it should be safe from 0.8 on to create pretty much anything with not too much concern about having to change your stuff when V1 ships.
I sort of think of it this way. 0.5, the exit criteria was a developer should be able to build real modules.
Yeah.
0.8, the exit criteria is designers should be able to build real themes. And I would say that the V1 exit criteria is that, you know, website professionals and end users can build real sites.
Yep.
And the Orchard is, we're going to be looking between 0.8 and 1.0, we'll be looking deeply at a lot of kind of fundamental things like, you know, optimizations for shared hosting environments. You know, does it run well in those environments? The performance, you know, getting that up to production worthiness. There's a lot of fundamental considerations to go look at now, and that's where the bulk of our effort will be.
And that's not to say that you haven't been paying attention to those things. I mean, like the whole multi-tenant foundation is really clever and specifically designed to solve the kinds of problems that .NET apps have had in shared hosting environments, you know, in the past.
Yeah. We certainly haven't been negligent to any of those things, but to brand something with a V1 label, we think there's work to do.
So, but it's fair to say that folks could build a theme today or a module today and have to make minimum, if any, tweaks in order for that to be compatible with the 1.0 version when it ships in January.
Yeah.
That is the goal.
Cool. So now I can go and I can write, start writing some cool contact module. That's one somebody out there was saying they wanted. Mm-hmm. I want to write like a...
Hey, we only have one field today, a text field. It would be great to have a module that has, you know, 10 or 20 different field types you can attach to content markers.
Right, daytime.
No shortage of opportunity.
Yeah, we have a user voice site, orchard.uservoice.com.
Orchard.uservoice.com?
Yeah, that has a few dozen ideas of modules that people can vote on. And that people can also grab and run with. So you can look at that. The top ones are probably the ones that people want the most, and yeah, you can just take it.
So how do folks that want to be on the front edge of participation, both designers that are going to start making themes, because 0.8 will be available for download by the time this hits the airwaves, as well as folks creating modules. Mm-hmm. How do they start now exposing those modules to folks that are using Orchard that might want to consume them?
For the moment, they still have to ask us for credentials to have write access to the feed.
Okay.
That's temporary until we have the gallery website, and in which case it would be just self-registration. But for the moment, you just send us email to OFEE.
Or the mailing list.
Yeah.
Just anything. Or just send Bertrand just, or I
yeah, BDRoy email. At Microsoft. Or
yeah, it Brighton. Takes us a couple seconds to create a user account
right.
for anyone.
Yeah.
And if you missed all of that, just use the contact form at msjoe.com and I'll forward your email to Bradley or Bertrand.
Yeah, and once you have right access to that feed, you're in control. You can upload anything you want.
And the other thing is for folks that are exploring Orchard and writing about it, you're publishing the interesting things that come out of the community on the Orchard website.
Yeah, we have a little aggregator feature. There is an RSS feed on the homepage where we try to publish the stuff that people write about Orchard. Yeah.
Awesome.
Lots of interesting articles on the community. So it's nice.
Well, that's great. Thanks for taking the time. I got to go back to my hotel room and get started on my YouTube clone module for Orchard.
Cool.
So. All right. Guys, thanks very much.
Thank you.